The psalmist tells us in Psalm 119, verse 18, that he prays that God will open our eyes that we may behold some wonderful things from His law. The Good Shepherd. The concept is a bit of a double-headed coin. First of all, we have the opportunity to view the pastoral qualities of the Good Shepherd. But it's not a spectator sport. So consequently, having observed, we're obligated to endeavour to replicate those attributes ourselves. In Ezekiel, God uses His prophetic word as warning to those who are placed in authority over His flock. Because of their bad practice, they're going to be expelled and no longer be allowed to shepherd the flock. And God is going to replace them with the Good Shepherd. Let's read from Ezekiel. Ezekiel 34, verses 1 to 16. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them, as a shepherd rescues, looks after his scattered flock when he is with them. So I will look after the sheep. I will rescue from the places where they were scattered on that day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them from the nations and gather them to them from the countries. I will bring them to their own land. I will pass them in the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and on the settlements of the land. I will tend them in good pasture on the high heights of Israel and with their grazing land. They will lie down in good grazing land, and they will have rich pasture in the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind the injured. I will seek the weak, but the sleek and strong I will destroy. I will be their shepherd, and I will shepherd them with justice. So Ezekiel was prophesying the arrival of the Good Shepherd, and in John 10, Jesus is announcing His arrival. John 10, from verse 11, Jesus says, I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down His life for His sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. When he sees the wolf coming, abandons them, and the sheep runs away. The wolf attacks them and scatters them. The man runs because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the Good Shepherd. I know my sheep and they know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep who are not of this pen. I will bring them also. They too will listen to my voice. And there shall be one flock and one shepherd. For the reason that my Father loves me, I lay down my life, only to take it again. No one takes it from me. I lay it down with my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. This command I receive from my Father. There was some interaction here with the Jews that I'm not speaking from the text here, and the Jews were listening and been hypercritical of what Jesus was saying. So some Jews heard and said, many of them said, he's demon possessed, he's raving mad, why listen to him? Well, others said, these are not the sayings of a man who's possessed by a demon. Demons can't open the eyes of the blind. And back to the text in verse 25, Jesus answered, I did tell you, but you do not believe. The works I do in my Father's name will testify about me. But you don't believe because you're not my sheep. My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me. I give them eternal life and they shall not perish. No one shall snatch them from my hand. My Father has given them to me and He is greater than all. And no one will snatch them from my hand. I and the Father are one. We use metaphors, analogies, draw parallels to contrast and compare different situations and different circumstances. But it's really quite difficult to make comparison between the Middle Eastern shepherd and biblical times and what passes for a shepherd in this country today. In biblical times, it was 24/7. And folks, if You don't. If you forget all the rest, I'm telling you. What I'm saying here is, Jesus was saying he was a shepherd, and that is 24/7. It's all encompassing. It is in your waking moments. It's in your while you sleep. It is all encompassing. And the point I'm making here, to compare it with the modern day shepherds on these islands, is not a true reflection. At 6 o'clock in the evening, Gladys may open the back door and shout, "Wilbert, the tea is ready." That didn't happen in biblical times. They were there. That was their vocation. Their life was total looking after the sheep. And if we merely see Jesus as a modern day shepherd, our view be much, much too small, too cramped, and far too limiting. There are similarities within the two flocks. The flock being the flock that of woolly creatures, and the other flock that Jesus claimed to be with the shepherd of, were vulnerable to predators. Some of those predators are natural predators, and some are spiritual predators. We can lack the ability to defend ourselves, again, naturally and spiritually. We don't always find it easy to get on with our counterparts. We're stubborn and difficult to manage. And occasionally we break out. Shepherds should have the ability to see fine detail. And that, again, is a crucial point. Whatever you want to do in life, you have to have that ability to see fine detail. And the ability to see fine detail usually takes time. And if we haven't taken time to stop and stare, we probably are missing something. I'm not saying we should stand our lives looking over a gate. Devotion to the stock is important. We must have empathy with the flock. And the functionality of the vocation, we hopefully can see similarities within the parable. I started to read from verse 11, and just to be pure sheep-like, I'm going to sneak back over the fence. I'm actually going to 10, verse 10, the second half of 10b. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. There are few things more satisfying in the work than to watch ewes and lambs in their family groups, thriving and developing to their full potential. The enjoyment of having gathered a batch of sheep up in the corner of the field and opened them, introduced them to a new field of grass, a new field of nutrition, which in turn will further develop their potential. It brings a smile to my face still. The field potentially including legumes such as clover, vetches, birdfoot, treefall. These legumes have the ability to capture nitrogen from the air and enrich the surrounding soil in which they are planted. We too have that God-given ability to enrich the environment in which God has planted us. It's worth remembering that the air is much richer in nitrogen after a lightning storm. Can we extrapolate this analogy a little bit further to suggest that when storms come in our life, this offers often followed by a greater blessing? Can we dare to even imagine how our heavenly shepherd feels when he reveals to us a new nutritious field where we can walk and where he can watch us develop and thrive? Verse 11 says, "I am the good shepherd." The Old Testament shepherd David in Psalm 23 gives an insight to the role of the shepherd, and he reminds us primarily of the first objective of the shepherd. Psalm 23, verse 1, you'll know it off by heart. It goes, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, leads me beside the waters, he restores my soul, he leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his own name's sake." It's quite a claim for David to make, that God wants a relationship with not only with him, but with us. As a shepherd cares for his sheep. We might think the psalm might begin with some activity, but instead the shepherd leads him down to rest. The Christian life is full of activity, but firstly it begins with what he has done for us. Not what we are doing for him, but what he has done for us. Sheep don't lie down easily. They only lie down when they're safe and secure. Not only sheep, us as a part of the flock want to feel safe and secure. And the world where people are driven by fear and of failure and losing and things that are precious to them, we need to feel safe and secure. And this 24/7 shepherd we have is how we can achieve that. The story is told of a man, a shepherd who lived in Derwent. His name was Reverend Michael Moyle. He had two flocks. One was in the church and one was out in the field. On one occasion, he was going to England on business. So he said to his protege, his assistant shepherd, we'll come back to that terminology, assistant shepherd, later on. He said to his assistant shepherd, a boy from the town who came to give him a hand in the evening. He says, "Will you look after the sheep while I'm away?" The boy, he was ecstatic. He was unbelievably proud that he was given such a role. He looked up to this man. He walked in his footsteps, and that he be allowed to take the role when he was away. But as the occasion came closer and closer, the young man shared his fears with his mother. He says, I'm not sure I can do the task. And his mother says, of course you can't let the man down. He says, but the problem is, the Reverend Michael Moyle hurts when they hurt, he says. He gets upset when they're not well. And sometimes he even carries the weak ones home. It was 24/7 for him. It was all encompassing. His life was a part of his life and a major part of his life. Verse 12 says, "The hired hand sees the wolf coming." This bit always irked me slightly. No, not irked me, no, but I'll tell you. I've lived in Scotland for 11 years, as a hired hand. Let's go with that there. I almost just didn't lie to me very well. So I'm going to use the term as a casual worker, as opposed to a hired hand. For there are many, many shepherds who are hired, employed, but whose devotion to their flock and their care is 100%. I mean, 100%. And in some cases, far greater than the owner of the flock, who keep them merely for financial gain. This is why I'm in awe of Middle Eastern shepherds, or indeed shepherds throughout the world, whose vocation leads them to endangering their lives daily. Let me show you the reading from yesterday's Streams in the Desert. It's the text is from 1 Samuel 17, verse 34, "And there came a lion." It's such an inspiration and strength to come in touch with this youthful David, trusting God. Through faith in God, he conquered the lion, the bear, and afterwards overthrew the mighty Goliath. When the lion came to destroy the flock, it came as a wondrous opportunity to David. If he had failed or faltered, he may have missed God's opportunity for him, and probably had never been chosen to be the king of Israel. There came a lion. No one would think that the lion coming was a special blessing from God. One would think only as an occasion for alarm. The lion was an opportunity in disguise. Every difficulty that presents itself to us, if we receive it in the right way, is an opportunity from God. Every temptation that comes is a God's opportunity. And may God open our eyes to see him, whether in temptation, trial, danger, or misfortune. Let's look at 1 Samuel 17 in a little more detail. But David said to Saul, "Your servant, I've been keeping my father's sheep when a lion and a bear came and carried off the sheep from the flock. I went after it, struck it, rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by the hair and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear." And then you almost could feel David's heckles getting up here. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he just defied the armies of the living God. David had a history of looking after what he'd been put in charge of, and he was deeply incensed by this Philistine who dared to challenge his heavenly shepherd. It's David here who reminds us that our heavenly shepherd, when predators come, He stops at nothing to help the eternal security of his flock. And Jesus develops the point further in verses 28 to 30 of John 10. I give them eternal life. They shall not perish. No one can snatch them from my hand. My Father has given them to me. He is greater than all. No one can snatch them from him. My Father and I are one. So he's saying here, no one, all powerful, 24/7, all powerful, and no one can snatch them from his hand. But with it comes a warning. Last year at lambing time, as we were going to bed one night, there's a ewe shaping to lamb. So I pulled her out and put her in an individual pen, probably the size of this wee stage, that something in that area. She was scanned for three, so I had big hopes for her. She always had three in the past, and she was scanned for three again. So the next time I saw her, I was hugely disappointed because she was in this pen with a single lamb. And I thought, whoa. Yeah, I'm sorry, I did feel, whoa, yeah. Much was given, much was expected, Johnny told us. Much was given, and I had expected much. And I was disappointed. In the adjoining pen, there's a ewe with two lambs. And so I take her out and put her down the pen. But and as I do, as I put them in the pen, I check them over and I just check them. I just check her mammary gland or udder to check she's enough milk. And this ewe had no milk. And then the penny dropped on me. This ewe had stolen two lambs from the ewe in the pen. She had called them out and I saw where they'd come through the water trough and out the other side. She had stolen them. And that seemed a happy situation. The ewe was in the one ewe had one lamb in the pen, the other ewe had the two lambs. But the problem was this ewe had taken the lambs. She had no nutrition, no feeding. It was going to be a short-term situation leading to death. She had called them out and they had followed and they were leading them to death. Not that the death wouldn't happen immediately, but it would happen because she had nothing for them. No nourishment, no development. So I took them back and gave them to the mother, and she thought, whoa, this is grand. She took them back, which always doesn't always happen. But all day, that ewe that had stole the two lambs, she was like a roaring lion. I could hear her 100 yards away, still looking for these two lambs. And sometimes the roaring lion doesn't roar at all. It's much quieter and subtler than that. But it still is powerful. So be careful of the roaring lion. Jesus says, no one can snatch him from my hand, but be careful of the lion, and say that they don't always roar. Peter's writing reminds of the danger of the roaring lion, and 1 Peter 5, 8 and 9 says, be alert and of sober mind. The enemy prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Resist him, standing firm in faith, because you know that the family believers throughout the world is undergoing the same kind of suffering. Verse 14 says, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and the sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for my sheep. The key word there is just, and I'm going to substitute the word just for in the same way. So it reads, I am the good shepherd, I know my sheep, and the sheep know me in the same way as the Father knows me, I know the Father. In the same way that the Father knows Jesus, Jesus knows us. And the Old Testament shepherd, again, David reminds us in Psalm 139, open it, folks, and read the verse, or close your eyes and let me read it over you. Psalm 139. You search me, Lord. You know me. You know when I sit down and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know, Lord, it completely. You hem me in behind and before. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain. where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go into the heavens, you're there. If I go and make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I rise in the wings of the dawn and settle on the faraway seas, even your hand will guide me and your right hand will hold me fast. If I say darkness will hide me and the light will become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day. And for the darkness is light to you. You created me in the inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. My frame was hidden from you when I was made in a secret place. I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body, and my days were ordained to me where it was written in the book before one of them came. How precious are your thoughts, O God. Vast, how vast is the sum of them. Where I count them, they would outnumber the sands of the sea. And when I awake, I am still with you. This is the shepherd. This is the care. This is the attention to detail. This is the 24/7. He knows our traits, our habits, our behavior in any circumstances. He's never surprised. I'd ask Joe to put on three slides. On the first picture, please, Joe. The first picture, sorry, go to the picture, please. Thanks, Joe. This one here, grand job. I've got the crook. I feel not naked anymore. Sorry for that wee outburst there. We lived in Scotland. We went to. I'm sorry. I've told the story before, and I don't apologise for that. We used to go to a village in the north of England, probably the side of Dunloy, to buy our sheep. It was a fair day, and there's probably 18,000 ewes for sale. We bought sheep from a guy, Jim Thornton. He lived down near Ravenglass in the West Cumbria. And Jim brought about 1,000 sheep with him for sale that day. He had them subdivided into the colours of their face. So there's 300, probably the same colour as this face here. That was brown with white speckles. There were 300 like this one here, sort of mixed half and half. These were, he called, those are the brown faced ones. These he called the bonny faced ones here. And then he had some like this here, he called these white faced. So these are almost white with some brown speckles. So he had 300 of all of those numbers, of those colours. And then they were subdivided into small, medium, and large. But to be honest, the truth being, there were none of them much more than 2 inches of difference in them all. This is over 1,000 sheep. So one day the chaps had brought them in and they're running up, and before they'd penned them up, they're running up and down the alley, and I asked the shepherds, what's happening here? He says, Jim doesn't like one of these sheep here. And eventually he got it pulled out, and I says, Jim, what was the problem with the sheep? He says, do you not see its tail? And I says, no. He says, look at this tail, look how short it was. That length's shorter than all the rest of them. And that was out of 1,000 sheep, and he was concerned. I mean, he was... We might call him a nerd, but I didn't. I drilled at him. He wasn't out with a whitewash brush. It was fine, fine detail. This is our God. This is our shepherd. He doesn't paint the people in the connection with all the one brush or the ones in all the one family. It is fine, fine detail. This is the 24/7 God who's our shepherd. The nth detail. Nothing is missed. Jim Thornton was annoyed that this tail was 2 inches short. How does God feel? It's not broad stroke. It is nth and fine, fine detail. I'm going to feel naked again. Fine detail. Once again, First Peter 5:2-4 reminds us of this shepherding vocation. It's not one to watch from a safe distance. It is one to get involved in. The verse says, be shepherds of God's flock that are under your care, watching over them. Don't because you're not willing, as God wants you to be, but not pursuing dishonest gain or eager to serve, not lording over them, trust it to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive a crown of glory that will never fade away. But don't be mistaken. Your role of shepherding within the church body can be completely effectively carried out in your effective prayer life. I'll have the other picture now, Joe, please. This is a picture of the church, I believe. We're leading, we've been led across. This is Shevet Yeo's crossing the Tweed. That hardly matters where it is. Where are we on the line? The shepherd has picked a day to move that is not dangerous. The tide is low, the gravel bank's there, and they can walk across. And they've probably walked there before. We're privileged that we can be led and follow others of equal mind and similar mind, and we're blessed in their company and their gathering and the spiritual productivity within the church. Verse 16 says, "I have other sheep; they're not of this pen. I will bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one shepherd and one flock." Jesus is likely to be talking to 100% audience, so 100% Jewish audience. Some of them living the bubble that they were that they alone be chosen. The Gentiles, on the other hand, were living in a bubble that probably thought this promised salvation is not for them. But Jesus dispels both the myths that they, and in turn us, can neither be included or excluded by denomination, by our works, whether we are good enough or try hard enough, but by grace alone, trusting in his love. In verses 11, 7, and 15 and 17, Jesus repeatedly re-emphasizes his proclamation of his love. "The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep," he says. "I lay down my life for my sheep. For this reason, my Father loves me, I lay down my life, only to take it again. No one takes it from me, but I lay down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and authority to take it up again. This command I have received from my Father." Is that Tommy telling me it's time to finish? That's our money to join. Tough it is. There's no direct parallels between Christ's proclamation and today's shepherds in these islands. Although a few have lost their lives working in the shepherd vocation, and there are a few have had life-changing injuries and illnesses, they were all accidental. But Jesus, there was no accident. Nor is he assured as not a result of anyone else's action. Instead, he laid down his life willingly, according to his Father's will. Although such a directive shouldn't be interpreted by any way that it made it easy, but instead it was for his direct love for his flock. I'm on the last page. Oh, I said in conclusion, almost to say. From Peter's letter, chapter 5, verse 2, reading the words again. "Care for the flock God entrusted to you. Watch over it willingly, not grudgingly." The shepherd of the Father's flock, it's a different translation. The shepherd of the Father's flock is under your care. Watch over them, not because you must, but because you're willing. This is us. He's talking to us. Remember, it's not a spectator sport. We must get involved. There's a guy along our road, the Blairn Road, walks into Garva. I'm not telling this story to make me look grand, by the way. He's called Jimmy Snow. I'm not sure his first name's Jimmy, and I'm fairly certain his second name isn't Snow. But that's what he's called. And he certainly isn't Snow in colour, anyway. And I stopped to lift him. And as I stop and lift him, there's a statue to answer, a statue to question, and a statue to answer. And I say to Jimmy, "How's today, Jimmy?" And as he plucks off her down the seat, he says, it's better now. So aren't we privileged that in life we give people a seat to plunk down on? That when we leave, or our contribution, whether it's 10 minutes or 10 seconds or a lifetime, that they're better now? We haven't been there. The shepherd's crook, and I've used this before as a visual aid, and I don't apologise for it. It's a hazel stick, and I imagine it's a Scottish blackthorn, or Scottish blackface thorn, horn. No matter what function the crook does, really, and there's lots of them, if you're down a brae, you'll use it as a walking stick. If you're standing in a pen of ewes and you want to shed one out, you can use it to shed them out. You could catch a ewe with a horn, or if a lamb is stuck down in the drain, you could get it out. Lots of functions. But whatever the functions are, there's one, we can roll them up into one, and the function is to an extension of the shepherd's arm. That's what it is. Whatever we're doing, it doesn't really matter. That's what it is. I'm here, and I want to be there, and I can extend my arm that far. God in heaven said he can move the mountains into the sea. But he allows us to get involved. He allows us to be an extension of his arm. He allows us, he encourages but he allows us to be an extension of his arm. So whenever, what a privilege to be an extension of the arm of God. To situations that he sees the need and we're allowed to get involved in. It's good to be used to. I didn't appreciate the privilege of not having to use glasses, but it's too late now. I have to wear them now. So. Right. To be called a crook is not particularly complimentary. And here's a couple of other fancified job titles. One is an underwater ceramics technician. What might that be? It's a dishwasher. A transparent wall maintenance engineer. A transparent wall maintenance engineer. A window cleaner. That's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So let's change the job title from being a crook to being an assistant shepherd. I've had many of note. There's a man, John from McFinn. There's a man, Wally from the Top Road. There's a man, Mervyn from Dunlop, Dunlop from Ballymoney, showing some promise. The youth at the barn were once inducted. There's a chap, Ben, from Staffordshire. There's a lass, Bethany, from Glasgow, and a lass, Gemma, from 6 Mile Cross. And Cackle Cassidy from down the inner lane is showing promise. And someday, young Zachariah, hopefully he'll be able to stand, and I'll be able to point their ewes out and he can catch them for me. But folks, the first assistant shepherd I ever had, and it's, let's go for 30 years ago, was a young man from Mahadoo called Peter. Hebrews 13 verse 2 reminds us, and hopefully you forgive me for paraphrasing, don't forget to show hospitality to assistant shepherds, for in doing so some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. So I might suggest in closing, when the Lord tweaks, prompts, encourages, allows you to do a wee job for him, and excuse the colloquialism there, please, for jobs for God are not wee. They are eternal. They are everlasting. But when he encourages you to do a job for him, get on your wellies and go for it. Thanks for listening.